If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and/or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool, so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Hello, everybody. We have Alexa Pavan here. She is an imperfect sustainability advocate, eco-content creator, and writer for sustainable businesses and environmental organizations. She is passionate about composting, ocean conservation, their intrinsicable link, and protecting not just the planet, but the people who inhabit it. She uses fun and light content on social media to shed light on issues we're facing on an environmental, political, socioeconomic level while providing tips. Her background in biomedical science and public health, but nowadays she uses her knowledge to make climate and environmental more palatable for the everyday American while modeling that it can be exciting too. Without further ado, Alexa Pavan. Hello, everybody. We have Alexa Pavan here, and she is, I don't even know how to describe it. She loves sustainability. I'm so glad you're here, Alexa. And just, I want to jump right in. If you could tell us a little bit about your backstory, about what made you so passionate about sustainability and all your work.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Victoria. So my background in sustainability is probably a little different from like other, I would say eco-creators is what I like to call us. But I grew up in a, usually there's like a journey, right, that people go through when it comes to sustainability. But I have a little bit of a different story. I grew up with my parents who are immigrants from Brazil. And growing up, we had, after they immigrated to this country and after so many years, they started a scuba diving business. And so I grew up in that industry. I live in the coast, off the coast of Florida, South Florida. You know, it's a booming business in this area. And I grew up doing ocean conservation, and it was a big part of the business. It wasn't just, you know, to recreate, but to also preserve what we love. And that those values always stayed with me. On the other side of that, at home, we also composted growing up. It was just very much a part of their culture. So that's just a natural thing that they always did. And then we grew tropical fruit trees in our backyard. I was always kind of like exposed to, I feel like, two sides of a very similar coin. You know, like the same, it is the same coin, but everyone sees it so differently. And I see them as the same, where I see gardening just as I see ocean conservation. It's all connected. And I guess that foundation really set the tone for my life and what I'm interested in and why I spend a lot of my free time talking about sustainability online.
I love it. I love it. So can you, and I know you had mentioned composting, so I would love to direct this question with your expertise in sustainability and bringing that into our outdoor classrooms, because I know a lot of folks that are listening are either early childhood educators, parents, and early school age educators. But how can we bring composting and waste management into our outdoor classrooms? But I also want to note that if you can also say, you know, that all the different, you don't need to be huge, whatever.
Right. Yeah. So composting, I think, is a great place to start with children and honestly with any age group, but especially children. I think it's like a fascinating foundation for them. Because imagine if they're growing up learning about composting at the age of 5, 10, 12, even 15, they're going to take that with them into their lives as adults. And it's probably going to influence the way they move through the world. So I think composting starting at an early age is awesome. I understand that like your listeners are from all over the country. Since I'm in Florida, I know that it's like, you know, it's different. We can compost year round. And I understand like it's definitely harder in northern states. But I do want to suggest other options, like besides outdoor composting where you just have like a pile and lots of carbon and your, you know, food scraps in there. That's an option as well. And like there is a way to winterize that. I'm not as familiar with that, but that's like an option to like look into. But besides that, you could have like a vermicomposter bucket, or you could either make one or purchase one already created. But I think that's a great activity to do with the children. But basically you have worms, and usually it's like a specific type of red wiggler worm. You can purchase those, and basically the worms are going to be helping with the decomposition process. So you don't need as much carbon. You still need to add carbon and your nitrogen from your food scraps, of course, but you get to see kind of in real time the worms breaking down all those food scraps and turning it into nutrient-rich amendment, which I think is such a beautiful process for the kids to see. And so I would really recommend that, because then you can also bring that bucket inside and still, like, you know, cultivate those worms in the winter, which is a fabulous activity for them. And plus, you can combine that with a garden. If you have some kind of garden already going, or if you just want to get some plants in containers, you can show them how there's like a circular process between the, you know, the waste management of your food going into becoming nutrient rich amendment or soil, whatever you want to call it. But basically, like, and then growing new food in that amendment. I like to call it amendment because it's much more of a nutrient-rich, I don't like to call it fertilizer, but it's basically like, if you have enough of it, you can use it as soil. But if you don't have enough of it, you can just use it as a top soil layer. Yeah. So that's what I just wanted to mention. But yeah, so it's a great activity to show the circularity of our food systems, of the carbon cycle. There's just so many ways we can incorporate that with a lesson plan.
Absolutely. That's amazing. So also, not all of us have big gardens for these great gardening plans. What if we have just a very small space? Can we still compost?
Absolutely. I think that vermicomposting is great for small space gardeners, and for, you know, if you just don't have space in general to compost. I live in an apartment, so I use a composting service that comes and, you know, swaps out my scraps basically for a new bucket, so I can just give them the food scraps and they take care of it. But the vermicomposter is a great option for bringing it, you know, keeping it small, and then also like just using some containers too that have a garden. That's my garden, because I live in an apartment. I have limited space and resources. So, you know, I grow peppers and tomatoes and all sorts of things, turmeric and ginger in my pots. So it's quite possible. And also lemongrass and herbs and awesome things that you can make for tea. And I think that's a great place to start, is that you don't really need to start with vegetables if you don't have the resources and things. You can start with like tea herbs, like lemongrass or lemon balm and chamomile and so many of those herbs or plants, and make the tea and grow them with the children, and then make it the tea with them, and they can also see that process. Then you can compost the finished herbs when you steep them twice, and then you can show that process as it continues.
So what if we have educators that just are starting out? These are very simple activities that they can explore.
Yeah, I think that's even better, is to maybe show the aspect of, because I do think that there is this stigma around gardening that you need all this money or all these resources. And I don't think that's true, honestly. We can start a garden with just some seeds and some soil and a container. And of course, water and sunlight and things like that, of course. But, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy, and it doesn't have to be a certain way. And I think that's like, you know, social media has kind of changed. We see these beautiful homesteads, and it really doesn't have to be like that. You know, even a small harvest is still food. And that's still something that the kids will recognize and see, what, like, it's almost like magic to them. You know, if they're not familiar with gardening, they it'll leave an impression on them. So to me, it's like small space gardening, or like not having a large garden, is not a problem. And like, this is your opportunity to maybe show them that you can repurpose what you already have in your home for, you know, a garden. Possibly, like, let's say you have like a greens clamshell, like, you know, those greens come in. You could use that to start your seeds, because it's a nice like humid environment once you close it up and you add, your soil and your water and your seeds. It's like, that's what I honestly use a lot because I'm just like, I already have this and I love greens. So I unfortunately do have some of those plastic containers, but instead of recycling them or like before I recycle them, I try to, you know, repurpose them first. So that would be a great lesson too, to just kind of let's like open our minds and get creative and see what we already have.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. It is amazing how much we accumulate. Yeah. It's incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about just that in terms of how we can establish more recycling programs within our outdoor classrooms?
Yeah, I would say, so when it comes to recycling, I just want to be clear, is I think recycling is a great solution for things like for things like aluminum, paper, and glass. I don't think that recycling is a good solution for plastic. So that would be a good lesson, I think, to share with the children, is that, like, you know, recycling certain materials are more beneficial to us than recycling plastic. And then maybe going into why plastic is a hard thing to recycle, all the different kinds of plastics there are. Like, you don't have to go into them, but you can just explain that there's different types of plastic that are made of different types of materials, which makes it harder to recycle. And then they can even talk about, depending how old the children are, we can maybe talk about like the impediments or the, I guess, structures in place that make it so that, you know, these companies can just make plastic out of anything and they really don't have much regulation. But then we could talk about alternatives to plastic use. And we could talk about what single-use plastics are and then how we can avoid them and like ways to refuse plastic, ways to repurpose the plastic. But then, of course, ways to think outside of plastic, right? Like, yeah. The only way we're not going to recycle our way out of a plastic crisis, where we really have to figure out how to use less plastic, how to manufacture less of it. And even those recyclable, when they make things out of recyclable, you know, things that have been recycled, plastic bottles or whatever it is, it's not necessarily better for the environment or better for our health to do so. So it's just something to keep in mind that, you know, there are downsides to recycling plastic.
Interesting.
It's also something that I think that it would be different than maybe the adults in the room might have learned. When I was growing up, at least, there was a huge push for recycling everything. And, you know, that includes plastic. But we've learned that, you know, also things have changed so much in the past 20, 30 years that things are made with so many types of plastic that really it changes the way that our systems that once worked, they don't work as well anymore, unfortunately.
And that's fascinating. It really is. It's really just educating ourselves on what works and what doesn't and what's in our community and how does it all work in our community and how can we as nature-based educators educate ourselves on this process that these systems do change over time. It's not just what we got taught once. But interesting enough, many months ago, we had a trash strike. So it was incredible to just witness the amount of trash that wasn't being taken away. And then what happens to it? And what ended up happening, people were sort of sneaking trash into our dump. And that trash started filtering into our woods. And all these containers and started affecting our animals. So there's this triple effect in terms of just thinking about that segment. And again, how can we translate this for our youngest children and then move right up? But I think the first step is what you kind of alluded to, which is educating ourselves in terms of how can we really educate ourselves and do it right and not just assume that, oh, what we're doing is I'm being a good citizen. So that's really fascinating. I want to go into our next section, which is just talking about just the surrounding areas and place-based sustainability and how we can kind of lean into our surrounding environments.
Yeah, I think community is such an important part of sustainability, but obviously for outdoor classrooms and educators as well, right? I'm sure that it's such a niche community that you all want to, you know, share your insights and things like that. And I think that's the beautiful part. And also like connecting these children to these resources and or organizations that they can, you know, kind of grow up with and at least be familiar with. So then once they're adults that they can, you know, make their own decisions and volunteer their time as well. But I think it starts by showing that we all have a stake in the community. So whether that's like doing a local cleanup or I'm just trying to think of kid-friendly specific activities, but I think like a cleanup is a great place to start because it's really connecting them to their environment and also taking the time to slow down. You can also partner with an organization to do that. And then the organization could speak a little bit more about what they do, which I think is important. And I would say like, although it's these children could be super young, I don't think that there's a bad time to start talking about like civic engagement. I think it's just underappreciated it as adults. Like I don't even hear as much of it as we should. I think it's just important to maybe talk to them about it and how our government is structured and like why it's important that us at the local level are really engaged with what's going on. And I obviously this will vary tremendously based on their age, but I do think that it's important to instill those values of like, okay, things don't change unless we make an effort to contact the people in charge, unless we come out to meetings, unless we, you know, join organizations to clean up the environment, things don't change. So I think by tying that with the cleanup would be a good idea to be like, okay, now this is a part of being like an engaged citizen, a good community member, and then kind of maybe challenging them to think about that further and how that could impact them in their future.
I love that. And also place-based learning and really looking at, and you're down in Florida, which is very, very different. I'm up in Beverly, Massachusetts, which is very, very different. We have snow on the ground right now. I'm sure the sun is shining where you are. And so the thinking about just that place-based and understanding and having that relationship with where you are, so then you can really kind of, we want to raise advocates and stewards of our environments. And so we need to really go out of our outdoor classroom, so to speak, and really lean into understanding that place.
Yes. Understanding the surrounding natural areas, a field trip would be amazing. Like I did some activities. I was working as a teacher last year with an alternative school, and I would teach them on the Everglades. And then they had a field trip to the Everglades. I didn't get to lead that one, but it was, I'm just glad that they got to have the kind of theory before that. And then they actually got to see it in person. And the Everglades is such a unique ecosystem to the United States and to the world. So like, it was so important for them to recognize that it's like, you know, right in our backyard, and show them that these areas are worth protecting. It's great to see, you know, them connecting with an area of nature that maybe isn't spoken about too much. Cause you know, we get a lot of love for the coastal regions, but not as much for like our inland ecosystems. So it's really beautiful to like connect them with something that's outside of the classroom, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I love that. And as you were talking, it made me think of the framework that we do here at Outdoor Classrooms, which is four different types of gardens. And I'm thinking, okay, if you can't go on a field trip, that maybe really understanding the place-based learning within those four types of gardens, which is gardens that feed. So that's a whole arena right there. Gardens that attract wildlife, and that's a whole arena. So what animals are in your area that you can actually attract to your outdoor classroom? Gardens as outdoor learning stations, and then gardens for art and beauty. So all of that can be also very specific to your outdoor space. And I just thought of that as you were talking, so it's fascinating to go back and forth on this.
I love that framework. I have to share that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just interesting, just leaning into the surrounding areas, that place-based sustainability mixed with composting and just our community. There's so much to dig in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how this hands-on outdoor learning can build environmental awareness and environmental literacy?
Absolutely. Oh, I love that you mentioned literacy more than anything, because I think that's the biggest problem we're seeing in this day and age with adults, you know, is a misinformation crisis. And we have like a science literacy issue, and we have just like an understanding of nature issue, right? Like a lack of understanding of nature. I think that by involving yourself in these activities, like from a young age, first of all, you're building such I keep using the word foundation, but these are foundational. These are such important moments in these children's lives. Like, I just think back to when I was a kid, and one of my core memories, for instance, is it's not a nature-based classroom, but it was my parents' nature-based classroom. You know, I was pollinating passion fruit flowers because we don't have the correct pollinator for that type of passion fruit. So growing up, my parents had like a ton of vines and we would have to pollinate them manually. And like,
oh,
that's,
wow.
Yeah, that's one of my core memories. And I just think about these children growing up with these core memories, and that influences you and it changes who you are and who you become. So I just think that unfortunately, not every child in the U.S. gets to have these kinds of experiences. So I think these children who are in these outdoor classrooms are so fortunate and have the ability to restructure their brain almost. It's really a chance to open themselves up and reconnect with nature, which is something that many adults are troubled with now. We're all trying to reconnect with nature, and it's hard once you're an adult. So to do that as a child and then hopefully grow up with those principles and really just feeling connected to the earth, I think is such an important part of being human. And I think it's an important part of, you know, becoming a steward. Like you said, it's how can we protect something if we don't know about it, if we don't understand it, if we don't love it, because we have to love it, you know? Yeah. And I'm not saying that they have to love every part of it. I just think that there could be something in there that the child finds interesting and just like run with it. And what I love about outdoor learning and learning about nature is that there's so many ways to incorporate different elements. Like you mentioned, the like art and beauty aspect of gardens. Like I think art and science, like that combination is, you know, it's becoming more and more prevalent, but I think it's still far behind, right? I would love to see more art and in combination with science and having that interplay. So I think that these are just such important memories and values and learnings that these children will take with them into the future. And it makes me feel really hopeful that these children are getting that kind of education.
Yeah, I mean, you really are. You're inspiring me to dig deeper even. It's just digging deeper into the systems and the process and the literacy of it all. And not necessarily something that we were taught when we were being raised, so to speak. And how can we update our script or what we're learning, our manual, and teach accordingly or facilitate that learning accordingly with our children? I just think that's fascinating. And then adding that curiosity play and developing that long-term environmental awareness. Any ideas that you can, or modeling sustainability choices in visible, authentic ways outdoors? Can you think of anything that might help our educators?
Like in a classroom setting?
In an outdoor, yeah. Sort of outdoors.
To model.
They're all different. Their settings are all vastly different, but imagine just a group of children in a backyard or in their school or in the woods. Just thinking about, you know, we have our five phases of teaching outdoors, and that's basically our framework that we teach. And the sustainability is the fifth phase, but it's weaving in that sustainability throughout. And how can we do that? So we have sort of the infrastructure, which I told you about, and then just getting outdoors and teaching and learning outdoors. And that's, I feel like that's where that literacy comes in. The literacy of sustainability, which is like, wow, that's like, let's unpack that. You know, how can we unpack the literacy of sustainability in our outdoor classrooms and make that something that's visible, hands-on? And I loved how you even used the phrase core memory. First thing that comes to your mind.
Honestly, the first thing that comes to my mind is composting, just because I just want it to be such a, even, you know, as an individual, I don't like to think in individual terms typically for sustainability. But if you were to ask yourself, what's the number one thing an individual could do to make a huge impact on the environment, like just with that one habit, I would say composting. By diverting that organic material from the landfill where it's going to wreak havoc on our health and on the environment's health by releasing excessive methane, warming our atmosphere and doing, you know, also releasing carbon dioxide. Instead of doing that, we're going to do something 100 times better, which is make it into basically recycling it organically, turning it into nutrient-rich compost to be then used for gardening. I just think that that cycle is just so important. But separately from that, I think, I feel like the topics that I brought up are exactly what I would focus on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I just...
And then gardening. We haven't even talked about gardening and growing food. I mean, we touched upon it. But really, why do you think that gardening and incorporating this Gardens That Feed is such a powerful entry point into sustainability education?
It's so important and it's so powerful because we eat every day, three times a day at least. And I think that we are so disconnected as a society from our food systems. So bringing that awareness back to, like, you know, I see videos online where people don't know that, like, it's almost hard for me to say it, but like people don't know that lemons come from trees and that like it doesn't come from the grocery store. Because I've seen these videos and they're not satirical. They're actually serious videos that they're like, oh, I can't eat it. It came off the tree. They don't know that they can eat a lemon off the tree. So it's really reconnecting ourselves back to that. And I think that like food is such like a cultural touch point for all of us. You know, we all have some kind of positive memory when it comes to food. And if not, like we can build that memory by showing them that it can grow from almost nothing. Like I said before, it's kind of like magic. It really is like showing them how we can use mostly nature's efforts and then our small little effort to create something with nature and then reap the benefits by eating it. So I think that like connecting with the food systems is so important. And also because besides the disconnect of overall food systems, we're not also thinking about like the ethics behind our food system. You know, we're not frequently thinking about that as a society, and we probably should. So I think that this is a great way to call attention to the matter without making it overly, you know, heavy for the children and kind of showing them that like, okay, someone has to pick this. Someone has to, you know, package it up and then it has to be distributed all across the country and explaining how gardening is, you know, different than that food system and showing that there's different ways and maybe even connecting with a local community garden. I know field trips can be hard, but if maybe that professional could come to the garden, usually they're very community focused individuals and they love to do kind of teachings and stuff. So maybe they could be like a speaker that comes to visit the classroom and they could talk about food systems. They could talk about what they grow and because their food that they're growing at the community garden probably is going to the community for free or at a very low cost. So they could talk about that. And it's just so important that even know that these exist in the first place, they could go home and tell their parents, hey, mom, did you know there's a community garden? And we could get a CSA box with them. And even something like that can change so much. Like, I think we often forget that children also have so much influence on their parents. So I think that it's a great entry point, like gardening and food and waste management. I think like all of like compost.
It all connects.
Yes.
It all connects so beautifully in that spiral. I see one of the Gardens That Feed is such a crucial piece of, and not everyone can have that. I sort of see these four types of teaching gardens as a ice cream sundae. So you can pick and choose what works for your outdoor space. But I love how growing food outdoors changes the way that children can think about waste and nutrition and care. And that kind of connects to what you're talking about with compost.
Absolutely.
Are there any sort of low barrier ways that schools can start gardening? So if they want to actually start a little gardening bed and if they had a little plot of land or even in pots, what would be a low barrier way that they could actually start that?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to say like maybe there's an opportunity to connect with the community garden and get a plot there. I know my community garden offers lots of plots and they do work with schools to do different like workshops and things like that. So that could be an option if you really have no land or space at all. But as I mentioned before, I think like showing the kids how you can really garden with anything, like you could even take like solo cups or, you know, anything that you already have on hand and be like, okay, now we're going to have some soil here. We have some compost. And then you could even do experiments showing like one of the, like, let's say cups has just like a regular, not so great soil and then one with compost and show them how like one grows better with compost. You could do like little experiments that way. But if you're really trying to get a garden that feeds, I would say maybe even if it's possible, if it's in the funding, hydroponics is a great way. Like I have a hydroponic system that I love, especially because I'm in Florida. I can't grow in the summer because it's too hot. So there's a lot of things I grow inside because of that. And I think that's
Can you tell us a little bit more about that hydroponics system?
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, like, this is a I bought a already made system, and I kind of, you know, just create my own little pods for it. But basically, it's low cost, like low as far as like the, to maintain and run it. It needs so little energy and only like about a gallon, I believe, of water, maybe two, but it's like lasts a couple weeks. So I don't really have to do much maintenance or anything. I think it's a great way to show children that it doesn't have to just be soil based. And I do think that, like, you know, it's hydroponics are very common. We all don't know that a lot of our greens and a lot of our vegetables are grown, tomatoes, lots of things are grown hydroponically that we find in the grocery store. So I think maybe showing them that there's different methods of gardening would be great. Like vertical gardening is another option too. And so if you have a small, let's say you have some space, but it's a small space, you can get a vertical tower. And there are some that have like a middle section where you can compost as well. So mm-hmm. you can put the scraps in there as it decomposes. It kind of becomes soil one with the plants and such. But I think like showing the kids that there are so many ways to garden, and like space and resources shouldn't really be too much of an impediment if you really want to grow something. And like I said before, a small harvest is still food. I think a lot of the time online we see like, oh, well, it takes thousands of dollars to make this much, to make a yield of this much. And I don't think that that should be the goal. I think that the goal should be like connecting with nature and understanding the food process, and then just eating the small harvest that you do get, like, even if it's peppers or if it's just the herbs, you know, it's something that you grew and you know what went into it and it's highly nutritious. So why not?
Oh, you're getting me excited. We have snow on the ground currently, but you are getting me all excited about the spring and getting ready. But we can start also plant, if you are in a New England area, we can start planting seeds indoors. Yeah. So there's lots of different things we can do. Absolutely. Oh my goodness. I could talk to you all day long.
Me too.
What I love to sort of circle up with is if you were to give a teacher one seed or a parent one seed of inspiration, what would that be?
My one seed of inspiration is that they are watching what you do and not as much as what you say. So I think that the, like you mentioned before, I love how you said modeling behavior, because that is something I try to even instill in the adults I teach online, where I'm like, I don't, even in my personal life, I don't really talk about sustainability. I kind of just do the behaviors, and then people in my life end up asking me about it, and it ends up being better. The outcome is better for both parties because they feel autonomy in the situation. And I feel like I got to still teach them without feeling preachy about it. So I think that the most important thing is to notice that we have a lot of influence over the children. So instead of just teaching them about it, maybe you start incorporating these elements of sustainability into your everyday life and into your classroom, like be mindful of plastic and especially single use plastic, be mindful of your waste and how it's being managed. And what you bring in your lunchbox or whatever it is, you know, I think that it starts with you. And if when kids start noticing and people, other adults also start noticing, I think that's when real change starts, because that's when curiosity builds. And then when you teach the class about that topic, whatever it is, I think that's only solidified because you're already doing those habits and they see it, they recognize it. So once you're already teaching them about it, they're like, okay, this can be done. I see them doing it. Because honestly, I see a lot of that. People are like, oh, that element of sustainability or this habit is too hard or too this or too time consuming. But I think then people see me do it and I try to give a realistic take on it. And they're like, oh, it's not hard. And actually, I do want to do this. It does seem fun. So I think it's really just like breaking down those barriers and really showing them that it is cool.
And a mindset, I think. You make a good point in terms of people do sort of go into it like, oh, it's too difficult. You know, it's too much. So, and it is a habit. Mm-hmm. You take a small step to create that new habit is a great tip. Anything else before we close up? I just want to thank you so much for your time and energy and everything that you're doing and teaching us all how to be more sustainable.
Thank you so much. I just want to say thank you for having me on here. I love what you're doing. And I think it's such an important area of work to like educate the young folks that are going to take us into the future. You know, I think this is so important and I would love to be more involved with it. I will say that I teach mostly adults. I guess my content is geared more towards adults online, but I do love working with children because I just think they're so fun and it's great to just see all the emotions and excitement on their face. So, you know, I hope to do more work with children in the future, but if anybody is interested in learning from me and then they could take that and bring it to their children, that would be great. I'm on
Instagram. Yeah, I'll have all your information in the show notes. So I'm going to get your information, where people can find you.
Perfect.
And we will put that into the show notes. And yes, more people need to learn from you. And I just really appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Alexa.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you're ready to take the next step and dive deeper into our community, here's how you can get involved. First, you can join our one-hour workshops. These happen every month with fresh and exciting new topics each time. It's a great way to get a taste for what we offer. If you enjoy the workshops, you can become part of our Circle membership community. And this will give you access to not only all the new workshops that happen every month, but it will also give you access to our entire workshop library, which is growing. It will also give you access to our monthly roundtable discussions. And also, as a member, you receive exclusive discounts on all our programs. It's wonderful, wonderful family. The final step, if you would like to dig deeper into our community, is to join our Outdoor Classrooms Teacher Certification Program. This program is for those educators who are eager to dig even deeper into our programming, and it's the perfect next step. If you want to learn more about each of these programs, or you're not sure where you need to start, or any questions that you might have, schedule a one-on-one discovery call with me, Victoria Hackett. I will put all of that information in the show notes. You can also go to our website at www.outdoor-classrooms.com to learn more information. We can't wait to welcome you into our community. Until next time.